We talked earlier this week with Scott Davis about how the change in attitude and producers' financial outlook has firmed up risk management strategies. Well, there's no doubt it has changed general business plans, too. We'll check the barometer to see just how the outlook has changed.
Live from behind the small green leafy microphone of AgriTalk via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Dr. Jim Mintert from Purdue University. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Gary Niemeyer and Vic Miller. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much, buddy. How's things going this morning? Everything okay?
Pretty good. There's rain on the window.
I was just pulling it up. I wanted to take a look at what the radar is showing us here this morning because there are some showers that are making their way. Boy, Eastern Iowa is I'm not going to say that it's covered up, but we've got a pretty good shot for rain here this morning. But it's quite the system, dude, from southwest Minnesota down through Iowa, back into southern Nebraska, northern Kansas, all the way down into Missouri. I mean, and this thing's going to continue to make its way across the Corn Belt. So it's not super wet out there, but it's nice to get a shower. No question.
Tut tut. It looks like rain, as they say.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I've been working on a few other things this morning, too, and trying to keep up with what's going on in the markets. A little bit of pressure on soybeans. Corn market is making its way to the upside. Mixed trade in the cattle complex. Lean hogs pushing to the upside. And that winter wheat market is finding a way to claw back. And spring wheat's leading it, Davis. Just when you go and throw the wheat market away, it comes back and starts to act like it's got some life to it again. Crazy stuff.
Yes. With the spring wheat market leading too. And originally I would have characterized the markets as moderately to fractionally sideways, but there's some stuff going on here all of a sudden.
There is. Spring wheat's got some double digits going. It's good
baby.
Stuff. All right, man. Let's go ahead and get started. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, the United States is likely to be the only large economy to emerge even richer from the COVID-19 pandemic than if the crisis had never occurred, according to the latest global economic projections released by the International Monetary Fund yesterday. The U.S. and China, the world's biggest economies, are driving the recovery. The U.S. economy is projected to expand 6.4% this year and regain its pre-pandemic size after an estimated contraction of 3.5% last year. Now, Chip, last week, President Biden described his infrastructure plan as a once-in-a-generation effort. It would involve replacing lead piping, rebuilding 20,000 miles of roads, and repairing the country's 10 most economically important bridges. Biden added that it would be the largest American jobs investment since World War II. Interestingly, Chip, Iowa and Pennsylvania lead the nation in the numbers of structurally deficient bridges. So be careful on those bridges out there.
No doubt about it. A large number, the 10,000 small bridges that are slated to be repaired in this plan, are in Pennsylvania and Iowa. It's crazy.
Well, Amazon supports a corporate tax hike proposed by President Biden to help pay for that infrastructure proposal, the company's founder Jeff Bezos said on Tuesday. Biden has proposed increasing the corporate tax rate to 28%. That's up from 21%. Bezos said in a statement, quote, "We look forward to Congress and the administration coming together to find the right balanced solution that maintains or enhances U.S. competitiveness." The U.S. dollar's share of global reserves has decreased to its lowest level since 1995, according to the International Monetary Fund figures on central banks' foreign exchange holdings. That was released last week. The currency now stands at 59% of global reserves as of December 2020. That's a 1.5 percentage point decline over the quarter. The dollar's depreciation has driven its slip as a share of reserves, along with an increase in central bank holdings of currencies, including the euro and the Japanese yen. And Chip, it sounds like a little strength in the dollar might help to sort of right this balance just a little bit.
Yeah.
But lowest level since 1995.
So. the economists out there, the economists really point out the fact that maintaining the dollar status as that default currency, the fiat currency, where global trade is done in U.S. dollars, maintaining that is vitally important to having any chance of ever addressing the debt situation that we've got.
Yes. Well, EPA, by the end of July, will reportedly issue its changes to a Trump administration rule that eased limits on emissions from vehicles through the 2026 model year. EPA Administrator Michael Regan said, quote, "We need to go as far as we can to meet the demands of the day," saying the science indicates we have a short window in time to reverse the path that we're on and mitigate against certain climate impacts.
Yeah, bring it on. Bring on the next generation of engine technology, because it's going to demand higher octane. And we all know where we're going to get that.
Love that. Well, Chip, the Olympics is now snared in the Xinjiang controversy. Axios is reporting that the International Olympic Committee gave a uniform contract for this summer's games in Japan to a manufacturer that has advertised on e-commerce platforms that its products contain Xinjiang cotton. And one of the factories overseen by the manufacturer is actually located in Xinjiang, according to the company website. The Olympic Committee emphasized that it, quote, must remain neutral on all global political issues. Chip.
This seems like one of those things that falls under the category of, you had one job. You had one job to do, and you screwed it up. All right, Davis. Thanks, buddy. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip. Just waiting for it to rain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of farmers are getting some rain right now. But, boy, everybody's in the field. We're using some new seed treatments out there. And there's some etiquette on how to treat the seed, isn't there?
Yeah, when it comes to treated seed, stewardship is definitely a strong pillar of being able to use those technologies. And our friends at Ag Retailers Association are part of a partnership with the American Seed Trade Association, Crop Life America, and others to highlight those six basic steps of stewarding treated seed. So one, follow label directions on the seed containers. Two, eliminate weeds in the field prior to planting. Three, minimize dust, for example, by using seed flow lubricants. Four, be aware of honeybees and pollinators are located near the field. Five, ensure that any spilled seeds are removed or covered by soil. And six, remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. Clean that spill up for one thing. Boy, it's that's one of the things that it's too obvious to the onlookers that are driving by and happen to see that spilled seed that it's we need to get that cleaned up right away.
Well, and these tools are ones that are so valuable in the field to help ensure that early, strong start to the crop.
Yes.
And definitely tools that we want to be able to use in the future and demonstrate how we can effectively use these tools and watch out for the environment.
It's one of the things that's making the planter pass that much more efficient, and that's what everybody's talking about, Margie. So let's make sure that we can keep those tools available to us. Good stuff.
We're going to keep that conversation going.
You bet. All right. Thank you, Margie. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Jim Mintert from Purdue University up next on AgriTalk.
Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Yeah, we are going to be talking about that that ag economy barometer here in just a moment. Here's the bottom line on the barometer, Davis. Mm-hmm. I'm Chip. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Hi.
The ag economy barometer rose in March to 177. That is the highest reading for the barometer since the record high reading of 184 in October of 2020.
Yeah.
So let's get some of the details. What's moving it around? Dr. Jim Minter, Purdue University ag economist. He's the author, analyst of the monthly Ag Economy Barometer. Does it in cooperation with the CME Group. Jim, welcome back to AgriTalk. How you doing?
Great. Great to be back.
Excellent. Glad you're here. Highest since the record back in October. What's behind that move?
Well, it was really all about people becoming more optimistic about the future. The index of future expectations jumped up 16 from a reading of 148 to 164. And that was really the driver. The index of current conditions rose slightly. It went back to 202. But truthfully, the index of current conditions has been essentially at record highs now for roughly 4 months in a row. We've been hanging right around that 200, 201, 202 mark. Since late last fall, but the change was really future expectations, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it certainly is. It makes me want to ask this question, and I think I know the answer to it, but did you change up the questioning, how you asked the questions about their future expectations that maybe kind of skewed the way the respondents were answering?
Oh, that's a great question. No, we don't. It's the exact same questions every month. So the start of the barometer survey is the same set of questions every month. And those are the questions we use to compute the barometer itself and the index of current conditions and the index of future expectations. So those questions never change. And they're always in the same order. They're always at the beginning of the survey. So that part hasn't changed. Now, what changed is people's attitudes, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we've been talking for some time about, you know, people being uneasy about things with respect to potential changes related maybe to tax policy, environmental policy, et cetera. I don't know that we had any big changes in that arena this past month. I think probably what might have driven this was the fact that maybe there's a little realization that from a longer-term perspective, these commodity prices are going to remain strong, right? Even with a return, to average or trend line yields this year, a bump up in acreage, we've still got tight supplies in both corn and soybeans. And I think that's perhaps a little bit what's behind this. The other thing that happened the week we did the survey this month was the same week that the USDA released the hog and pig report. And I think that gave us a little optimism on the livestock side because that report suggested pork supplies are going to be smaller. A positive bump for pork prices and really for the meats in general. So I think those two things came together, but it was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly is. You know, the consistency of that report or the consistency of the survey there, the consistency of the survey is one of the things that makes this thing so valuable. And when you see that a 16-point jump in any index from month to month like that is a significant move. So, boy, the attitudes are changing. There's no question about it. You know what, Jim? I love what you're saying about the commodity outlook because what you're doing is you're putting a timeline on it. And that conversation has been coming up more and more in the second hour of AgriTalk when we talk about market outlook. The timeline and how long the opportunity for profit is going to be around is coming up more and more in the conversation. So I think you nailed it. I think it's the idea that it's not just this year and next year that we've got an opportunity to lock in profits. It's this year, next year, and that 2022 crop is in on the conversation now too, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, so often in agriculture, particularly with corn and soybeans, we get acclimated to the idea that we get these run-ups in commodity prices that are related to a shortfall in production. And that leads to the old commodity phrase of, you know, long tail, right, with little prices declining fairly rapidly following that. And I think a lot of people thought that's what was taking place when we saw the rally last fall. But I think there's this recognition now, no, this has really got a lot more to do with worldwide demand. But the wild card there continues to be China. And, you know, so much of what this is driven by has been demand coming out of China. And that's the other really interesting part of our survey. People are not that optimistic about what's going on with China. So that's the part that's a little hard to get a handle on. You know, we've been asking that question. Do you think the trade dispute with China will ultimately be resolved in a way that benefits U.S. agriculture? We started asking that at the beginning of last year. At the beginning of last year, 80% of the people in the survey said, yeah, we think it's going to be resolved in a way that's good for U.S. ag. That percentage kept declining as we went through 2020 and declined again here in March. It dropped six points to 31% in March versus 37% that felt that way in February. So that's the part that's a little hard to get your arms around. There's kind of this uncertainty, or I don't know if I want to say negativity, but certainly uncertainty about what's going to take place with respect to China and how the trade dispute's going to be ultimately be resolved. And yet there was more optimism about the future.
Is that a reflection of Biden's China policy, or at least the perception of Biden's China policy?
It could be. We had a little bit of a, you know, a jump there with respect to what people were telling us. In March, April, May, and June of last year, the percentage saying that they thought this trade dispute would be resolved in a way that was good was pretty consistently in the 60s. And then we didn't ask the question for a few months, and we asked it after the election, and it dropped down to 50%, and it's been kind of drifting lower ever since then. But I think it's really a reflection of uncertainty, and I guess,
you know,
as an economist, I can understand that. This is extremely uncertain.
Yeah, and that trend that was in place is important to take note of before the first week of November 2020. So that's, good point, So we're more optimistic. What is, don't you ask the question about how they expect their farm's business to perform this year compared to last year?
Yeah, we do. And we converted that into an index to make that a little easier to interpret. So that's what we call the Farm Financial Performance Index. We basically ask them, how do you expect your farm's financial performance to be this year compared to last year? And that index really took off. You know, if you look at, for example, last April and May, that index was all the way down at 55, 57 points. It started to improve in the summer, and then last fall got up into 118, 116 range. In February, it was 121. It went up again in March to 125. That's the most positive reading we've gotten on that question since we started asking it back in the spring of 18. So people are feeling pretty good about their farm's financial performance. And, of course, I think that's being reflected in that record high current condition index as well.
Exactly.
Jim, so, I noticed a word in relation to farmland values that stuck out to me in the report. Bullish on farmland value expectations.
Yeah, I probably could have put extremely bullish, huh?
Extremely bullish even. Wow.
We have two questions that we ask about farmland values, one that looks at the short-run outlook, which is just 12 months ahead, and the other one is 5 years ahead, and they're both at record high levels. The short-term farmland value expectation index rose 3 points to 148, and, you know, if you happen to go to the website and look at the chart, it's pretty amazing to look at that chart. If you go back to, last April, that index was down around 70, and now it's at 148, so it's more than doubled since over the last year, basically. And on the long-term farmland expectation index, the swing isn't quite as big because over longer periods of time, people are always more optimistic about farmland values than they are necessarily over the short-run perspective. But still, a big change in that one going back to last spring. You know, last spring, that index was down around 129, 130. It's up at 157 now. So people have become much more optimistic. And again, I think particularly that long-run farmland value expectation index correlates pretty well with the bump that we've seen with respect to that future expectation index. You know, if you're going to be optimistic about farmland values over the next 5 years, you're probably optimistic about agriculture in general.
Right. Jim, give me 20 seconds on this. Is there Is there velocity behind that revenue that, that farmers are anticipating? Are they going to spend it?
Well, if you look at the Farm Machinery Index, the Farm Capital Investment Index and Farm Machinery Purchases, the Capital Investment Index is a little bit off its highs. Its highs was back in December and January at 93, but it's at 88, which is one of the highest readings we've ever had since we've been collecting the data. So people are pretty optimistic about making investments, and they were a little more optimistic this month about making farm machinery purchases as well.
Jim, we always appreciate your insights into this. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity. Look forward to being with you next month.
Excellent. That's Dr. Jim Minter.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, at the start of the show, we were talking a little bit about the strength in the wheat market. What's going on there?
Yeah, I don't think anything really. Just a little bit of corrective trade in here. Okay. We've seen price pressure recently, and I don't think there's any real news per se. Like I said, just some corrective action, some spreading action with corn and soybean pits and those types of things.
Gotcha. Mixed trade in the corn market.
Yeah, we're bull spreading it a little bit today. May contracts up about a penny, and new crop December is down a fractionally. So not a lot of spreading action, narrowly mixed. And the bigger action today is in the soy complex.
Yeah.
Meal's trading to the upside, but soy oil is sharply lower. And so there's a lot of spreading action going on in the product markets there. And then soybeans are following soy oil to the downside. So really, just a grinder market right now, and soybeans just kind of grinds to the upside, grinds to the downside, and goes nowhere. And that's been the case now for more than a couple months.
Got another price pop going on in lean hogs. What's happening?
Well, the back end of that market in particular, pushing out to new contract highs in many of those months. And front end of the market, not as much strength there in the April contract, but just another explosive move to the upside and a multitude of fundamental reasons, but also technical and money chasing it to the upside.
Very good. Very good. A little pressure on live cattle.
Yeah, we got a starter trade at 120 in the south, so we'll see, but just a little bit of price pressure.
Thanks, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Let's get this farmer forum started. It is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, National Corn Growers Association, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, all in cooperation with the financial and technical support of USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service, or, of course, NRCS. Just go to www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about it. Gary Niemeyer over in Illinois joins us right now. Gary, did we have to pry you out of the tractor cab and off the planter to get you on here to do this?
Why, gee, no, I'm done. I'm just kidding. I just wanted you to know that I did retire last fall, but I can tell you that half, two-thirds of the corn's been planted around here already.
Seriously?
Yep, it's that dry.
Wow, that is a running start, man, because your go date where you're at was just April 5th, right?
Well, you got to put the hammer down when you get the chance. That's right.
Yeah. Well, we've paid the price for it in the past for not doing it, haven't we, Gary?
Well, you have to go with the season, and the ground is just working beautifully right now. And the problem is, I sure hope we get this rain that they're forecasting, because we're going to need it.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, let's find out if Vic Miller up in Northeast Iowa is getting any of that rain. It looks like it's probably raining up your way, Vic. How you doing?
Well, pretty good, Chip. Everything is, and yes, we are getting rain, and it's been kind of off and on here this morning. No huge amounts yet, but it's welcome. Let's put it that way. And so everything is moving forward.
Yeah. You know, that shower late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, that was a bit of a surprise for me. Or I guess it was late Sunday night, early Monday morning. That was a bit of a surprise. But, boy, that one was sure welcome, too. I'm glad that we got it. Our go date isn't until April 10th in Northeast Iowa, I believe. But there's lots of prep work getting done, isn't there, Vic?
Oh yeah, that's the big thing right now. There's, you know, anhydrous is going on, you know, gangbusters on it. There's some little spraying going. There's, you know, big thing is we've got to get a lot of our cover crops killed. We really haven't had any time, you know, that's been fit to do that. It's been wonderful weather, but the wind has just been tremendous.
Yes, and, it has.
You know, we get a little, at least I get a little concerned spraying Roundup when we're in, you know, these kinds of winds that we've had. But, yeah. You know, everybody's getting machinery ready. Things are going. We're not like Gary, you know, with anything in the ground, although we do have a neighbor that put in 40 acres of beans over the weekend.
Wow.
So, and you know what is it? I think the crop date on beans is like the 22nd of April. So I think that's he's pushed the envelope. All right.
Yeah. Boy, they are pushing the early planting on those soybeans. Oh boy, that's one of the reasons that we were talking with Margie about the seed treatments at the start. That's those early beans are using it a lot. Vic, I want to lean on your experience with the U.S. Grains Council a little bit here, because when we were talking with Jim Mintert, the respondents to the survey have been consistently showing lower and lower optimism about trade with China, and it, you know, compared to what it was at you know, what their optimism was, say, at the start of 2020. Are you in that camp? Are you less optimistic now with China, or do you think there's still some great opportunity there?
I think there's probably some opportunity there yet, Chip, but I want to put a caution in on that, mm-hmm. because depending upon what we see coming out of this administration, you know, we were told that, you know, all of these tariffs and everything were going to go away. There's not been one thing yet that has been dropped. And as we start looking at what China is doing worldwide and proposing, you know, there's getting to be an animosity straight across the country, it appears, toward China. And, you know, at any time they can just say, well, sorry about this, but we're not going to do this anymore. You know, I think we're probably going to be okay until the South American crop gets, you know, handled and everything gets tied up there. And then I fully expect to see, you know, shipments shift from the United States to South America.
Yeah, okay. Okay. You know, Gary, I'm going to lean on your experience with the corn growers and ask the same question. What's your take on the relationship, the trade relationship between the U.S. and China?
Well, obviously it's tentative at best, but, you know, if you follow some of the issues they've had with weather over there, like flooding and stuff, you have to take advantage of a situation when it comes to you. We haven't really exported any corn to China since 2012 until this year of any sizable quantity.
Right.
But you just never know. These things come and they go. And quite honestly, this is the largest corn export year we've ever had on record by a little bit. And that's great. That always adds to the price for the farmer.
Yeah, certainly does. Certainly does. You know, the index of future expectations jumped up to 164 in the Purdue University Ag Economy Barometer. 16-point gain in a month. Gary, I got a feeling that the question was asked before the STEP Act and the proposed taxes and the changes to the step up and basis and everything were out there, and the conversation started on that, because there's some scary situations with that.
I hate to say this, and point blankly, the stepped up basis will be the demise of the family farm. That's my take on it. You just can't pass it on to your other generation. And, you know, they were talking about, it'll be a $41.9 billion amount of money to be coming in this year. And I have to ask the question, so, you know, what about food security? You're going to take people who have been throughout probably several generations raising grain. Who do you expect is going to buy that ground, and who is going to farm it?
Yeah,
that's a big question in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Vic, do you share those concerns?
I certainly do. You know, when you look at, well, what it will end up doing, it's going to drive the value of farmland much, much lower.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be so much of it's going to become available. I mean,
yeah.
Honestly, stop and look, even with the current proposals that, you know, they could, you'd have the 3.5 million, and then there'd be another 3 million allowable exemption. Okay, understand with these average farm here, it's unfortunate that when we talk in the millions of dollars, and people do not comprehend that that is where we are. And it's through nothing that we have done primarily. I mean, it's just the value has gone up. Mm-hmm. But even with that type of a thing, if you're able to deduct $6.5 million, you know, just understand, you know, most operations are in that $10 million area.
Right.
With land and machinery and whatnot all. That's $1.5 million worth of tax.
Yeah.
Well, where are the heirs going to suddenly just come up with that kind of money? And, you know, let's face it, as a farmer, Gary and I both, how would we just write a check for $1.5 million tomorrow morning to the federal government and say, we're going on with business as usual?
Right.
No way, Vic, and I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Fellas, I had a wild thought as I was thinking about this, and it's kind of a strategy that I've employed for my own financial life, but I don't know that it necessarily would translate if you're talking about $1 million tax bill. But what about some kind of life insurance or something that would set aside cash, you know, that the kids could access, you know, at your untimely demise, that they could maybe use that? Is that there's got to be some way to come up with the money to lay in a plan to have that there for them. Any thoughts?
Well, I think maybe the situation there is we need to get something concrete so that we know what is coming forward. Right now, there's just tremendous speculation, and I know that we've had a couple of conversations with our estate attorney, and, you know, he's just up in the air, because he said, you know, we can do this, we could do that. But one of the real kicks here on this thing is this: if they pass this thing, it's retroactive to the first of the year. Well, once you make something retroactive, then there's no way to...
You can't plan around
the whole situation. No, you can't.
Yeah.
Right. You can't plan around it when that kind of thing starts happening. So it becomes very, very difficult. And, guys, I'm glad that we talked about it. And if some of you out there are thinking, geez, you're talking about this again, yes, we are. And we're going to continue to talk about it until this thing is beaten down and taken away and does not pass. Because Vic said it. It's the end of the family farm. And look what it's going to do to your asset values. We're going to if this passes, we will redefine asset rich and cash poor. That's for sure.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer. For a strong start, trust the tried and true protection of Corvus and harness extra herbicides from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Farmer Forum. It is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Sponsors include SIMPAS, the Nature Conservancy, United Sorghum Checkoff Program, Valent USA, the Farm Journal Foundation, Trust in Food, which is a Farm Journal initiative, and, of course, the financial and technical support of USDA's NRCS. Go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. Davis, I know you got something that you want to cover.
Well, yeah, and I wrote about this for Landowner this month. Just real quickly, we're not going to get to it all. The 30 by 30 initiative, it's an effort by the federal government, and it was part of an executive order signed on January 27. That was the one that halted oil and gas leases on federal lands. But basically, the idea is 30% of U.S. land, 30% of U.S. waters set aside, put under government jurisdiction by the year 3030. Comes from some global biodiversity initiatives, from the Half Earth Project, which recommends 50% of the Earth's surface be conserved in a natural state. The only way to save upwards of 90% of the rest of life is to sequester 50% of the Earth's surface and leave it in a natural state. That, according to conservationfund.org. Fellas, what do you make of the 3030 initiative?
Well, Davis, there's about 49 counties total, and it's really from Nebraska to Kansas that are affected in this land grab. And the land grab is in response to the president's 30 by 30, which you talked about. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, currently 26% of the coastal waters and about 12% of the land is government controlled in the U.S. To meet this goal, it'll take about 440 million acres will be needed to be conserved within the next 10 years. And according to the House of Representatives version, this bill will control a complete ban on commercial fishing and the removal of all agriculture land from the land area taken from the concerned area. And my first guess at looking at that area, it's right above the Ogallala Aquifer. I probably didn't say that correctly.
Ogallala.
Used for irrigation. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
That's my guess.
Yeah. Interesting. That's Davis. This is something that we need to make sure that everybody is up to speed, like Gary is on
Absolutely.
This on this 30 by 30 plan, and we need to spend a little bit more time with it in the future. No question. No question.
For sure.
Gary, those are some fascinating numbers. And Vic, Gary explained it right. It's a land grab.
Well, it's 100% land grab. And, you know, once again, once we get into this situation, how is it going to be achieved? And that's going to be one of the big determinations on what as things go forward, how does it go forward? You know, I'm just seeing more and more situations where we're getting to the point that we are going to try to deny private property rights in this country. And that's what this is really all about. And if you go back, I don't know, you remember, Chip, the old UN Agenda 21?
Oh, yeah.
What was Agenda 21? It was exactly what this land grab is.
That's right.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And that's where we're headed with this thing. It's a world idea here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Between that and stepped up basis.
And and the talk about a minimum global tax.
Oh, geez. Yep.
You know, connect all these dots. Vic's on it.
Yeah.
Connect
exactly.
all the
but,
dots.
You know, that's moved from 2021, Agenda 2021 to 2030, and that's what they're really pushing to get all this stuff done. And ironically, if you watch socialism, it's usually incremental. They grab a little bit at a time and just keep grabbing and grabbing. And I can take that a step farther. You don't think that there's something to do with fake meats and other things that are on the agenda to make this happen? Mm-hmm. And then I saw where they were talking about these Fortune 500 companies that only 51 or of the 52 corporations actually pay taxes. Well, they're going to go after that tax, really? If you didn't pay tax at 21%, you're not going to pay tax at 28%. So
right.
That's kind of a mute point, I would say. And quite honestly, corporations send out their profits and dividends so that it's a passive income to start with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the one of the greater issues that I see, we continue to talk about how by increasing the taxes, this is going to make corporations more economically viable. How is that going to? I've never yet seen a tax increase make anyone more economically viable.
Economically viable. I hear you, buddy. I hear you. Vic, I got to ask you this question. We don't have a lot of time left, but I got to ask you, since you're up there in the land of cover crops, what do you and your compadres up there think about this carbon sequestration and the potential for a carbon market?
Well, Chip, we're interested in it. We're very interested in it. And it looks like, you know, there is a potential here for another revenue source. However, at the present time, who determines the amount of carbon that's sequestered? Who determines what the rate is? There's just a whole lot of questions out here. And right at the present time, I've looked into a couple of them. I think $20 is the cap on most any of this per acre. There's a couple of them I've gotten emails on that one's paying $6, one's paying $9. Well, that doesn't even begin to offset anything in my estimation. And I think you really have got to be careful. But then if you read these contracts, you want to read these contracts extremely carefully, because the documentation that you are required to submit is horrendous. And you are required to do this. Otherwise, there's a penalty.
Oh, geez.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, so, if they want to participate in carbon sequestration, and make it more than a feel good effort, they're going to discover what the cost of that is. That's the only way that they're going to get broad enough participation in the effort to make any difference at all. Vic, it's always good to talk with you, sir. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Chip.
Gary Niemeyer, always good to talk with you too, my friend.
Can I add one thing? Talk to
real quick,
congressman, about everything that we talked about today. They need to hear from us.
Hear. Good word there, Gary. Come back this afternoon. We got Mac Marshall from USB.